Hello, I'm Richard Del Conner, founder of Shaolin Records in 1984. I'm producing 8 podcast radio shows for coyoteradio.tv, the newest, weirdest radio show we have yet to imagine. I'm also producing a blues rock record for Kung Fu Cowboy called Scorpion Resurrection. The Shaolin podcast, this Shaolin Records podcast, will have 3 sections usually. Upcoming albums I'm working on, music videos I'm producing or directing, and then the 3rd section, the basement tapes. Today's show is kind of, it's to me almost anxious. I've remembered a couple more Newfoundland stories to share with you. And also the Jimmy Kimmel thing about the town of dildos, kind of interesting on the, well, we'll get to that in a minute. As far as music videos go, I'm going to be moving a bunch and re-uploading and releasing some soon, but I don't have any real news on that right now. And in terms of the basement tapes, I'm embarrassed. Oh, God, what a horrible show last time. I was trying to do it an octave lower and just kind of sing along with it an octave lower. I think it sounds dreadful. Maybe I'll go back and delete that at some point. I don't. But I like leaving things as an experiment or I'm not sure. But so I told myself I would prepare for this particular podcast and I would do the high falsetto. We're talking about an octave and a half difference from the last performance. And I was supposed to practice for it, and I have not practiced for it. Actually, I probably sang it maybe twice in the last week, so a teeny bit, but not much. And I definitely don't feel prepared for it, but I got to keep these shows going. I can't hold up the show just because I haven't been practicing enough. we'll give it a back. What I'm going to try to do is, especially since I really ruined the song last time by singing over the lead vocal, and I've noticed that when I try to join in on some of my tapes, is sometimes, you know, I'm supposed to be, of course, featuring my new addition, but if I overwhelm the existing material, I don't think I'm doing anybody a favor. So if I am going to perform this falsetto to the song, No Hope and Surrender, that's the song I botched last podcast. No Hope and Surrender. I'm going to try to sing the higher harmony. And it's not a part that I should sing. It's like a high Robert Plant type of thing. But it'd be good for somebody else to sing that. In fact, even the lead vocal now is really my higher register. As you can tell by my voice, I'm older now, so my voice is lowering. So it's easier for me to hit the lower stuff. But I can hit those notes. I did, like I said, sing this song a couple times in the last week. So I know I can hit those notes, but I'm not going to give a stellar performance. But the beautiful part of this thing is hopefully I can lay back enough that I won't ruin the song. And thirdly, is hopefully somebody will get so excited about the song, they'll say, hey, I want to sing that song with you. And then, hey, that'd be nice. I don't want to do this song all by myself. Somebody come sing with me. All right, so let's see. This is going to be fun. Let's have some fun. This is the Shaolin Records podcast where Buddha rocks. Hey, continuing along in the history of Richard Del Conner, a record producer, exiled to St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada in 1970. I was there for a couple of years until I turned 18, and then I escaped. I packed up my stuff, snuck out of town, and hitchhiked across the country, and then hitchhiked down the coast back to my hometown of San Diego, where I was not well received. Everything might have been thrown away, and I'd been kind of abandoned. I don't think anybody ever wanted me to come back. But let's not get that. Let's get back to the Newfoundland part. Okay, so I'm in Newfoundland up there. We're in 1970, and remember, this is the day of long-distance phone calls. So 1 minute was like 10, 15 bucks or something. So I never talked to my parents for a couple of years. So here I am up there in Newfoundland all by myself, stranded, Arctic, and, you know, just accepting it. Well, actually, I did not accept it. It was very, there was some heart-wrenching, lonely breakdowns in the very beginning of it, and some resolutions to man up and deal with it, which I did. So, but at this point, I'm telling you about my music career there. Now, I was in this one band called Lukey's Boat as a bass player, and as I reminisce now, it's a shame I didn't stick with them or something. I don't know what we were creating, or maybe I was at the end of the band. Maybe they were kind of in a demise. I don't know what happened to them. So I don't mean to say anything bad about them. I wish them success. And if they're together, hey, I'll join them and play bass. I'll join them and do a special guest bass sitting for them. I'd love to. Glad to always play with my old friends. Okay, so where were we? So I was playing with, and so I started another band, a blues rock band. And I might have even called it blues band because I actually, there was a certain period in the early 70s where I had a prejudice against rock and roll. Now, just like I have a prejudice against jazz right now, that's been consistent my entire life. But the rock and roll thing had a period there where I thought Bill Haley and the Comets and a lot of the guys from the 50s were basically, I don't know, I don't want to use derogatory words, but they just weren't up to my level of sophistication in terms of what I wanted to do musically. I don't know how to say it nicely. They just seemed kind of primitive and redundant and simplistic to me. And the whole rock and roll concept of going down da dander 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 down. You know, just kind of going like that, that kind of rhythm, that, and the kind of like monotonous rhythms that sometimes bass players were forced into to maintain that consistency, kind of like in disco when they forced drummers to give up all their fancy kick drum beats and just go boonk, 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 you know, so people couldn't miss the beat. Oh, God. Music became so stupid in the late 70s. But that's not where we're at. That's later. So we're still in the smart period of... In fact, while I was there, I was actually in the... because my guardian... Well, I had several... different guardians while I was there. I don't know. I should... I guess I had three. I had two and an invisible guardian. The last year I was there, I supposedly had a guardian, but it actually wasn't anybody. I was just kind of a floating... I was like a rogue immigrant. I think I was completely off the map. I don't know if they... That is kind of weird. Do they even know I left? As far as they're concerned, I'm still in Canada. I just realized. As far as they're concerned, I died. They're probably trying to hide records of me because they think I drowned or something. I disappeared. Interesting. I'll have to contact the Canadian government on that. Anyway, the point being, I'm up there in Canada in 1970, and I decide one of my friends, one of the few people I got along with, remember, I was not well received. I'd already, I got a haircut right when I left town. In fact, I made a big deal of getting pictures of the longest hair I had. It was barely over the top of my ears, and I was so proud of it. And then I had to get a haircut and get shipped out of the country to Newfoundland from San Diego. Anyway, so I'm in Newfoundland, and I'm growing my hair, you know, just continually growing my hair. And in 1 year, man, it grew so much. You can see pictures of me. My hair grew very, very, very fast back in those days. And I had very long hair very quickly. Okay, but anyway, this is one of the few guys I got along with, because I basically was getting beat up between classes by all the other newfies who were resentful of the fact that the girls liked me, and I was from California, and I was quick, and I was, you know, it's not like I was real strong or anything. I mean, I swam and did exercise, but I wasn't real strong, and the hockey players, of course, some couple of them were really strong, and they used to try to beat me up in the hallway between classes, and people couldn't understand why I never went to the hockey games. And I just knew if I went to a hockey game, I was going to get in a fight. It was one of those guys wanted to pick a fight with me, and I was going to have to be in a fight. So why do I want to go to a hockey game, get in a fight, you know? And so anyway, I never actually went to any of my high school events just because I knew I was going to get beat up. But I had better things to do. I was going out with my friend Ab, who wasn't a very, he was not a soch either. And we formed our rock band, and I can't remember the drummer or the bass player's names. They were, I guess, came and went a couple of times. But but my friend Ab Stockwood, the guitar player, my fellow guitar player, he was the rhythm, and I was taking the lead. He was on a Telecaster, and I was on my Mustang. I had a red Mustang guitar, and yeah, Fender Mustang guitar. So yeah, with a whammy bar. And so anyway, I'm okay. So and. Our band was called Dog Meat. Now, to wrap up my little story, there was a little incident I wanted to tell you about. One of the gigs we got, which is, I think we all got paid $25, which in 1970 in Newfoundland was a lot of money. Yeah, so they probably had $100 for a high school dance, four of us. And so anyway, we had to go play a high school dance in this little village in Newfoundland. Now, I don't know what town it was. And it's funny. Now, right now, Jimmy Kimmel's doing this big thing about he's supporting this funny town in Newfoundland called Dildo. Because, of course, the name, he was attracted to it. And now he's kind of like using it as an entertainment thing, which is kind of neat. But the beauty of it is he's bringing light to Newfoundland. He's bringing the whole world to look at Newfoundland. And I think that's really awesome because Newfoundland is just a rock in the ocean between Greenland and Canada.
Canada, and it's totally ignored. But it's a beautiful, beautiful country, and it does have its redeeming factors and rewarding uniqueness to it, and a horrible history that maybe people should know to learn its lessons, too. So Newfoundland is an interesting country, and I graduated high school there and did a year of college, so I'm a Newfie, at least a little bit. And so anyway, I'm happy with Jimmy Kimmel for bringing light to Newfoundland. Thank you, Jimmy. And I've always wanted to go back there to Newfoundland, but you know, I've never been able to afford to, and I really don't want to just scrape back in there with my tail between my legs either. I'd like to kind of go back as a winner. So one of these days I'll go back, and when I do, I'll even go through and say hi to the people in Dildo. But there's a couple other towns there that I actually did have some friends in, and some Bayman, and a couple of, and one of my friends, I can't think of his name, but I know I've got his town, because and where he's from, and half the people in his town have the same last name. But there was a couple of really nice people who I shared the dormitory with at Memorial University of Newfoundland when I was there in St. John's for a year. And I was staying at Doyle House, the fraternity Doyle House. That's where they stuck me when I was abandoned. Like I said, I spent that last year there, I don't think without any guardian. And so I was basically, I turned 18 in 72. So anyway, we'll get to that story. But the story. I'm playing this gig. I was supposed to wrap this up. My mind is wandering here. We're playing this high school gig. Now, this is a cute story, and I actually transposed this story into my book, Sid's Place. So when you read the book, Sid's Place, there's a gig that's performed by the Razors, a group that I'm that Tom Calder is the sound man for, and they're performing at Camp Pendleton. And I took this scenario, this true life scene that happened in Newfoundland, and I used that to portray this Camp Pendleton scene, which is a riot that breaks out within the place where we're performing as a band, Camp Pendleton. So in Oceanside. So let's see, where were we? So getting back to this Newfoundland, this is the real thing. This is when I actually created a riot. This may be the only riot I created. Now, I was not a participant, but I was there seeing several riots, and I've been a part of protests and things like this. But in terms of riots, this is the only riot I think I can take credit for. And well, maybe not me, but the drummer. Maybe he gets the credit for inciting a riot, but it was our band. So here we go. We're at this high school dance, and we're playing along. And some of the kids are probably drinking. I mean, who doesn't drink? I mean, when Canada actually adopted Newfoundland, the Canadians protested. They were so against it. They did not want this to happen. It was a totally political move. I don't think if they would have taken a vote for it, the Canadians would not have taken them in, because there isn't industry and economy in Newfoundland. So all they are is basically going to drain what they call the dole, D-O-L-E, which is government payroll. Draining Canada of their dole is the way they kind of look at it, or used to think of it. And I doubt that it's changed a whole lot. Although there is one industry that Newfoundland has created, and it has just cracked me up. Back when I had Apple service, and maybe I get it again, they have actually launched an Apple, or they had a couple, one or two, I don't know how many industries, but they'd set up Apple service, when you phone in for Apple service care or whatever, and they were in Newfoundland, and I recognized their accent. I go, where are you? And she goes, Newfoundland. I go, hey, I'm a Newfie. And we'd talk, and it was like, wow. And so I actually met two or three Newfoundlanders by calling in on Apple care for my, fix my iMac. So that was kind of funny. That was the only time. And I met a Newfie another time. I was working for Cirque du Soleil as a stagehand about 3 years, or 4 years. Oh, I'm asking them longer than that, because they haven't hired me since I was 60. So, God, was that 5 years ago? It's been a long time. Anyway, right before I turned 60, when I was still working as a stagehand, I worked for Cirque du Soleil on several of their setups and teardowns. And it turned out that somebody in the crew was also from Newfoundland, a girl. I can picture her. And I gave her my information, but I haven't heard from her. But, you know, I just feel like Newfies are a rarity, and, you know, like an almost extinct species or something. It is rare. And I would have been glad to help her or do something, or anyway. But, yeah, there's very few. One other Newfie, and you can see pictures of him. I met him. He was auditioning, and I gave him the gig. He played a Telecaster, too, like Ab did. You can see pictures of him on some of the websites. If you go to AmericanZen.org, he's playing a Telecaster. He's a little overweight, blondish hair and a beard. And he was a Newfie, too. And I was really bummed. His wife, we weren't making any money. It's like, hey, you're not getting paid. You know? And so she, I think, dissuaded him from performing with us anymore. And I don't know what happened to that guy, you know. But I had a Newfie in my band and a guitar player. And he kind of, like, faded out on me and disappeared. It's like, well, Anyway, hey, if you're Newfies out there and you're hearing this, I support Newfies. I'm a friend of Newfies, Newfoundlanders. So anyway, hey, say hi and let me know you're there. I'm glad to know you. So, oh, where were we? Okay, back to our story. I'm getting so distracted here. It's funny, just reminiscing. I'm getting back into that. It takes me a while to fish up these memories. But the, talking a long time ago. Okay, here we are. Let me finish the story. I'm on stage and we're performing, and I can think of a couple of the songs we were performing back then. And I was playing Fleetwood Mac, and one of the songs I used to play was called Judy Blue Eyes, or I can actually sing the song. I had the guitar solos and everything. I played. I love this song. It's a really. God, what's wrong? I should have prepared that title. Sorry. Anyway, the song by Fleetwood Mac. I used to love to perform that song. So I know we performed that probably at this gig. And I was doing some other songs, believe it or not, by Blue Cheer. I used to love Blue Cheer, so I played some of their stuff. And, of course, I was playing some blues and whatever. So anyway, at one point, here we are. Get to the end of the story. All this information is flooding my mind. Somebody, I can kind of picture him out of the side of my eye because I was up there singing at the time. Maybe a Savoy Brown song. Actually, I was probably doing Savoy Brown. And I look over and there's some guy trying to stagger up and talk to the drummer. And so I'm doing this. And somehow, I don't know how I figured this out or when I knew what's going on, but I guess it was after the fact. And he's like, the drummer says no. He's shaking his head and saying no. And the guy keeps badgering him. And so the drummer, I think, pushed him back. And then the guy yells at him. And I was trying to sing and look forward, so I don't have a complete visual record of the whole incident of what happened. But basically, this fellow came up to the drummer and said he wanted him to play the song Wipeout. I can play that song, and it's actually a very good song, and it's not that easy to play, really, to play it well, too. It's a good little song. Anyway, we didn't have Wipeout. I don't think we played a single surf song, and we definitely did not have Wipeout in our menu, our set list. And so this guy got, I don't know, he got mad. I don't know if the drummer did something to hurt him, but he got pissed. It looked like it was going to become a fight, and then I can visualize this in my mind. I can see a couple of guys coming from the right side of the stage up towards the drummer, and I realize that he's being attacked. So he's got the one guy and he's got his two friends, and they're coming up and they're in the drummer. And from that point on, now everything kind of goes slow-mo. I guess this is where the adrenaline kicks in. Whew. Too tight on the memory. I feel the adrenaline kick in now. Whew. The drummer punches, kicks, whatever. Okay, I'm losing attention because now, not only have these guys fallen back, but now we got a couple of guys trying to come up at the front of the stage to attack my drummer. So I grab a mic stand. Sorry, I'm a little choked up here. And I swing it over my head, and boom! I grab this guy, I hit him right across the stomach. I don't think I broke anything. I hope. I never heard anything about breaking anything. But I swung it, and I hit him, and I knocked him off the stage. And I think he knocked into one or two other guys. And then I think I was still holding the mic stand, and with the butt of it, I pushed at a couple of guys in the audience to get them back. But they grabbed it or whatever, and I just let go of it. It wasn't my microphone, fortunately, because I don't remember having any qualms about letting that microphone go. Whew, a little choked up here. Sorry. It literally was a riot. They stormed the stage. And we were fighting them off. And I could picture like about 5, 6, 7 guys coming up. Boom, kicking, punching. And we're on the stage. And it's like one of those movies where you're fighting to be king of the mountain. And we were literally fighting these guys off. And somehow, I remember, I held them to get out of off the stage. And from behind me, I think I was the last one off. They were, like, fighting, and I'm sitting there, and I was kicking, and I think I grabbed another mic stand, because the last thing I remember, I had another mic stand, and I was swinging it and hitting the people, and they got out behind me, and I had my guitar on, and I remember going backwards, and then the next thing I knew, I was kind of like at the parking lot. Whew, that choked me up. Now, we got out there, we got out to the parking lot, and then we were kind of like just staying out by our car, and we were looking at this place, and it was like one of those movies where there's some monsters, like, trashing it up, and lights are flashing because they're eating and killing everybody. Whoa, I'm getting all choked up. I didn't think this was going to happen. But it was horrible. And people were just, by the time the police and the ambulances came there, I don't know, we couldn't get out of the parking lot or something, because I remember
The last thing I saw was when everyone was out of the auditorium, I can remember looking in there and every single bench and every table was just all helter-skelter as if there'd been a hurricane in there. I couldn't believe it. I don't know what happened after we got out of there, but it was just horrible. Sorry, I got all choked up. I didn't know this could happen. But anyway, that's the story of the riot in Newfoundland. I got it. Sorry about that.
Whew. Wow. That was quite an emotional experience for our producer, Richard. Okay, let's continue. This is a test of the Shaolin podcast system. You will have no desire to perform acts of violence, and you will enjoy smiling whenever possible. Do not be alarmed by friendly behavior. This has been a test of the Shaolin podcast system.
Well, as I've been telling everybody, Scott Karahadian has already compiled the soundtrack, has created a soundtrack for the Kung Fu Cowboy Rock and Roll Movie 1. So I'm excited to share that with you and launch it here at coyoteradio.tv. We're actually planning to have him interviewed on another of our radio shows. Maybe we'll have him come over here also. So anyway, the soundtrack, I know what some of the songs are. I've asked him not to actually tell me the list. I'm actually looking for him to let him put it together and see what he does. In fact, there's one song I'm going to have to create an instrumental version for him. I think I've got it somewhere, perhaps already. So the soundtrack to this album has not really changed over the years since its inception, but the concept of the movie has changed to some extent. The Kung Fu Cowboy Rock and Roll Movie 1, the original, the first of the conceived Kung Fu Cowboy movies back in 2011, the movie was intended to be an art film, or an artistic film, or a long-form music video telling a movie story, with, of course, a whole bunch of acting and story in it, and acting in it between the segments. But the songs were chosen to tell the story, so the story can be told through the songs, and you link the songs together and you have the story. So when we were discussing how we were going to redo this, because we're actually going to come back, and we were discussing filming this movie in Super 8. We're going to shoot it in Super 8 and then scan it in 4K, so we'll have a professional theatrical release product with a unique, of course, video feel to it, and being the smaller format, it'll even have more of a video feel, which is all the more reason we're going to be able to cover that up by going kind of psychedelic, because these are going to be music videos. So rather than being a detriment, we're going to make that an advantage. So I'm really excited to see this movie through, and maybe not in the way it evolved to, which was a $20 million movie, but going back to something that was going to cost us about $20,000 in film costs. So we'll see. I'm excited. But we're going to start sharing the soundtrack with you very shortly. And in terms of the soundtrack, the story of the songs are going to start telling the story of the movie. So maybe we can have some fun with that and compare the original stories of the songs to the stories that they're going to portray in the movie as we start to figure out how to turn them into music videos to portray the storyline, which may not, of course, represent the original story that I wrote the song based on. So it's kind of a little dilemma for me sometimes to disassociate myself from my own songs and storylines to let them have their own life in a new product. But I'm looking forward to it.
We're rebuilding the coyoteradio.tv website. It has its own video section, okay? Now, there's two types of videos. We've even got comedy. So we put the comedy videos under comedy. But when you look under video, we decided, okay, let's make it real easy. Let's call them music videos. So when you look on the top masthead at coyoteradio.tv, it should say music videos. Click on that button in the menu on the upper part of the page. What do we call that? The upper menu bar. And you click on music videos, and you'll go to a list of music videos. Today, there's only one. We're going to be adding them in here, and we're developing different systems for how we're going to format them and deliver them to you also. So this is going to be really exciting, but I can't tell you much about that yet. But at least go here for right now and then see what we've got. And one of the first ones that we've already got, it was made some years ago, is by Scott Karahadian. Remember, there, you know that name. He's the author of the Kung Fu Cowboy movie. Well, he actually, years before he co-wrote that movie with Coyote, he actually shot this music video. And the music video, he actually shot a couple of them. This one is the Peace of Mind number 2. And right here, you can get a good idea of the psychedelia that he's capable of adding to this rock and roll movie. It's a wonderful little psychedelic video. Peace of Mind number 2 by American Zen. And you'll see the coyote in a whole bunch of roles. And it's a really fun video by Scott Karahadian. So come on over, coyoteradio.tv, and check out Peace of Mind number 2, directed by Scott Karahadian. Coyoteradio.tv. You want stuff? We've got good stuff. Of course, come check it out. Well, welcome back to the studio. And I hope you're happier with today's show, Mr. Connor.
All right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, I didn't have a chance to practice this, so I just whipped off a couple. Well, let's see what happens. Let's have some fun, and hopefully it'll be worthwhile.
Oh, Mr. Connor, I'm sure it'll be fun. This is a great song. Just do your best. We're ready when you are, Mr. Connor.
City has got me down. I'm much too tired of just hanging around, but I don't know where to go. I guess that anywhere is better. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Connor, Coyote, Kung Fu Cowboy. That was a wonderful performance.
Oh, God. Thank you, Gene. No, it wasn't. I wasn't really prepared for the vocal part. I mean, I could have been stronger. And the flute part, I only realized I could put a flute part to that song in the last week when I told you I did try it a couple of times. And I think that maybe a flute solo would be a wonderful thing for that. So I'll see if I can't work up something better. And I've got to stop singing other people's vocal parts. Well, that was an interesting experience, reliving or remembering that riot in Newfoundland. Sorry, I actually got quite choked up there. So the end song today is going to be Black of Night. Now, this was written when I was exiled or trapped in Utah. I seem to have had a couple of periods of exile in my life. And in fact, Jimmy Kimmel, Utah has a town called Beaver. So if Beaver was your sister city and Dildo was your brother city, I don't know, maybe you could have you could start forming a fam. Okay, anyway, create a family. Anyway, the next song, Black of Night, is about the forces of the Mormons working against me in the background to undermine us and get us fired or lose our jobs. And yeah, it was a harrowing experience there for a while. At the end of the experience, I ended up being very comfortable in Utah, which was a shame because I really should have been in California. But I ended up being very comfortable and getting along and having a great time with the Mormons. A lot of good students were Mormons. And, of course, I got stories about the disenfranchised Mormons I taught. So, but that wasn't the point of this. The song, well, maybe it is. The song Black of Night is our end song. And it's nice to be able to have these songs that talk about my life. I've actually got some songs that talk about my Newfoundland experiences. One of them is called Precious. And I think I called my band Lotus at the time, and there's been so many other bands called Lotus. I don't think I'm going to release the album, if I ever do, under that name. It'll probably be under The Rich or something else. But there is a song, and you might be able to find it on the internet, because I have promoted it a few times, and it's called Precious by Lotus, American Zen, or The Rich. I'm not sure, but that's talking about me in Newfoundland. All right. Have a great day and enjoy your song and see you next week or soon.